Lauren, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first up, we're in a time that you yourself have described as a place where period activism is out and it's proud. Blood becomes ink, becomes lipstick, becomes art. But realistically, there is still a bit of a taboo surrounding the topic. Why is this?
I think there's always going to be a taboo surrounding bodily fluids. I think we're a culture that, and we're a people, that finds blood a little icky, just as we find other substances such as phlegm and semen and urine a bit disgusting. And I think no matter how many successes feminists have, I think some of the disgust is instinctual, and I think both men and women harbour that as well.
So in Fu's homeland of China, only 2% of the population actually do use tampons compared to the US, where they have about approximately 48% population use tampons over there. Why is there such a huge discrepancy?
I think we need to look at the demographics of China in terms of economy. And China is a developing nation where they haven't had the same influences in terms of rampant consumerism that the West has. And I think that that's a driver in the sense that, you know, we've had tampon advertising in Australia since the late 70s. That's been the case in the United States. It's not the case in China, even in 2016. And I think we need to acknowledge advertising plays an enormous part in how we manage our bodies in every aspect, including our menstrual hygiene.
Do you think Fu's statements are going to have any impact on this?
Look, I think the best value or the strongest function of her comment was that she introduced the concept of being able to swim while you've got your period. Now, for a whole lot of people who are unaware of tampon use, which is the case in China, where the majority of women report not even knowing how tampons are used, she created the capacity to have dialogue that, hey, maybe there are other options for me. Now, it's important to acknowledge, though, China does have a different culture around menstruation, so it's not the same sort of silence and stigma that we have in the West, but nonetheless, they've got their own issues, and water is one of those issues where there are taboos around cold water and menstruation. Nonetheless, she created the capacity for options and to talk about different methods of handling your period, and that's really important in a culture that hasn't had much dialogue around tampons.
So there are a lot of myths, I guess, surrounding tampons, which may be attributed to the higher use of pads. I mean, one of them is toxic shock syndrome, the scariest thing in the world to every 13 and 14-year-old girl.
Yeah.
What are some examples of this, and where have they stemmed from?
Yeah, so the internet is a wonderful source for information. Unfortunately, it's a source of a lot of crap information. And a good example of this is the concern around asbestos. And, you know, this is a rumour that's been circulating since the earliest days of the internet, where there's a theory that tampons are actually made from substances including asbestos, and that it's a grand conspiracy on the part of tampon manufacturers to fill tampons with asbestos, which make women bleed more, therefore they use more tampons.
I had not heard that.
It sounds like it might, you know, there's plenty of these type of rumours. Another favourite is lip balm is filled with ground glass, so that we get addicted to it and keep using it. The internet is full of these rumours. In fact, there are no tampon manufacturers in the West who are using asbestos in tampons, rest assured, but the rumour doesn't go away.
I hadn't heard that rumour. That's amazing. That's really a pretty great example
of
just...
But the problem is that it has this sort of, if you like, kernel of truth, in the sense that we can liken it to... I shouldn't say kernel of truth. There's no truth in asbestos in tampons. What there is a kernel of an idea that we can relate to other aspects of our culture. For example, we know that snack food manufacturers put sugar in products, even salty products, because there's an addictive quality to sugar. So that same logic in terms of thinking about market behaviour and encouraging heightened consumption, you could apply that, you know, in a sort of vast slippery slope analogy to think that it might extend to something like tampons. Not the case here, but nonetheless, there's that same sort of internet logic applying.
We can guarantee that your tampons do not, in fact, contain asbestos.
I think we're not going to do a legal offer of allowing listeners to sue us, but yes, according to the Federal Drug Administration in the United States, there are no tampon manufacturers in the US or Australia making asbestos tampons, rest assured.
So just following on, I guess, down the myth track, I mean, there's one that it refuses to go away. The stigmas attached to the use of tampons due to a fundamental lack of understanding in relation to virginity. Why does this one just not go away?
Yeah, so there is, firstly, there's this cultural obsession and preoccupation with virginity being an intact time. And now, if you think of sort of poor quality sex education and poor quality understanding of what the hymen is, for some reason people have this perception that it's like a football banner that people have to plough or run through, and therefore if you use a tampon it stabs this beautifully intact membrane. That's actually not the case. The membrane stretches. It accommodates a whole lot of things across your life course. Tampons are just one of them. And this perception that a tampon is somehow connected to virginity, I mean, we no matter how elastic our definitions of virginity are, one doesn't have sex with a tampon. And therefore, use of a tampon on its own has nothing to do with virginity. But we're still a culture that has a preoccupation with this fraudulent notion of an intact hymen.
That football banner analogy just might be the best thing I've heard all day.
Thank you.
And so just before we let you go, just looking into the future a little bit, the crystal ball, all that jazz, how can we actually go about reducing negative stigmas and social panic to make sure that women are actually making informed choices when it comes to choosing the right period product for them?
With everything, it's education. It's creating a dialogue in a community where you're able to talk to other people without feeling like you're a weirdo, without feeling like, have I asked a dumb question? And that education has to expand to men as well. Women only feel so weird about their periods because men don't get them. If everyone got it, the periods would just become like other bodily fluids, which, yeah, we might find a bit gross, but nonetheless, everyone has them. Because periods are uniquely gendered and men tend not to know a lot about it, there seems to be this continued stigma of women needing to keep quiet about it and keeping it away from men. And this sort of casual discussion about things such as methods.
Well, Lauren, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.